He's the chief sports writer at the Sydney Morning Herald. It's Wednesdays with Andrew Webster.
It sure is. Hello, Webby.
Matthew. Hello, listeners. Hello, world.
Well, hello, world. When and you say hello, that, you've got to...
And hello especially to Ben Simmons, who sounds like he's having a special time over there in Philadelphia.
Well, you've been around sport long enough, so let's hook into this one. You've been around sport long enough, Webby, to see standoffs, player versus club, but this is next level stuff. This is $30 million on the line for 1 year of your contract alone, and this is played out on NBA season opener day.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? It obviously seems like it's a bit of a tactic from... He's under instruction, surely, from his agent to go to perform or to act this way. I thought it was really telling, the comments from Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, there just before I came on air, talking about how this isn't the first time that it's happened. It's not a quote-unquote modern-day thing. That said, and you pointed to it at the top, don't you find it just a great shame that Ben Simmons, who is this great export of Australian basketball talent, is going down this path? Not just the way that, you know, what happened in the playoffs for the 76ers last season. And then he didn't play for the Boomers, which got up the nose of quite a few former Boomers who said, you know, if not now, then when? The likes of Shane Heal and others. He said he was going away to work on his jump shot. You know, it just seems like he's working on his Instagram account while he's there in practice. It's a very strange situation. Look, I was just reading up the Athletic website, which seems to be all over this, was saying that and this is what I love about American sport. Like, the access is ridiculous. So you've got this whole a pack of reporters and cameramen there capturing the whole thing. Like the other day, they showed him there with holding his mobile phone while on the court. But the Athletic have reported today that he even walked past the security guard and the security guard said hello, and he iced the security guard. Didn't even acknowledge the security guard at all. So I know you would like to think it's resolved, but it seems to be an interesting standoff between club and player at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, like I said at the top, I've been told about SportsCenter redoing the start of their show because this story dropped and it's bigger than the NBA season opener. The whole bad boy routine fits into the headlines beautifully. Like you say, he's training with his phone in his pocket and then he just walks out on his coach, and now he's got players coming out and slamming him as well. I think he's falling down, and he wouldn't give a flying stuff about this, but he's falling down that routine of how Australians are now looking at him. And after pulling out of the Olympics, that was a little notch there. It appears as though there are more red flags along the way than we actually realise to get to this point.
Yeah, for sure. But you have to question just how much damage he is doing to his own brand. And I don't know. I understand the whole negotiation process in terms of a trade and trying to get out of there and get out of there for the best money that suits both parties. But you can act professional. I mean, you know, he's 25. He's got a long way to go in his career. It just doesn't seem like it's going to... But where does it end?
Well,
I
that's
mean, both the player and the club have dug in so hard. Like, where does this give? And for and you'd have to say that it, like, I know they're saying it's not a distraction, but the 76ers are going to be shadowed by that until something is resolved, whether he either takes the court or whether he gets traded. So it's not conducive, really, to trying to win an NBA championship. That said, the season goes for a huge amount of time, so they can have a distraction now and no distraction down the track.
I'm going to catch up with Phil Murphy from ESPN a little bit later in the show and ask him those questions as well. My thought on this is that it ends in divorce. I can't see Ben Simmons playing at the Philadelphia 76ers, and because players have the power, the 76ers are going to have to wear it. They're going to have to move him on. I guess the biggest question after that is what happens to Ben Simmons next, and what club wants to take on somebody like this, and also somebody at this stage of his game. He's clearly got issues with his game that have now been laid bare.
I think the
biggest
Who's
question
take
is
him? Maybe the Dragons. Oh, hang on, he's not over 35, so they're not interested in him.
Little jab,
bang bang,
little jab, double whammy.
Cop
to start.
That. Cop that.
Let's talk about the Penrith Panthers now. You would have heard me off the top there. I think Tyrone May is a separate issue to Nathan Cleary and Stephen Crichton in this one. And when I read the statement yesterday, mate, from the Panthers saying that we'll discuss this Tyrone May at the board meeting, surely his position at the club is on the line?
At what point do the Panthers say it's worth it? Like, I mean, he's an okay contributor to that club. He played 13 minutes off the bench in the grand final. I think he fills a hole in terms of a roster when there's injuries and there's Origin, which we've seen throughout the year. But how many more adverse headlines can you let a player create for your brand like he has? I read the Panthers' statement with interest yesterday, particularly around the statue, because all the dialogue from the club behind the scenes in the last couple of weeks is, why is everyone making a big deal out of this? So I think it was a statement that was basically done out of necessity. I don't really know how many people at Penrith believe it. And to be honest, it's not the biggest misdemeanour in the world, the breaking of the trophy. And as I sort of wrote in my column last Friday, they were really angry, the club, that I had linked it to the death of Norm Provan. But I didn't link it in terms of trying to have a shot at the Panthers. I was saying it just the amount of former players and people in the game that really felt like the trophy had been disrespected was more of a mark of respect for both Norm Provan and Arthur Summons. But Penrith have to realise, and I think they're one of the best stories to come out of the NRL in the last couple of years, and they should be celebrated. Nathan Cleary gets a bad rap. He's just got some certain people in the media who don't like him, and he's made a couple of stuff-ups. He's 23. But in the big scheme of things, they're not the biggest mistakes. He's a class act. When you talk to him, away from football, he's a really, really respectful young kid. A lot of those other players in that team, the likes of Luai, the likes of To'o, they're great ambassadors for the sport and for their area. But they're going to bring it all undone if they don't get these little things in terms of their perception in the public in order. And, you know, you can... Like, the whole claim that they're an arrogant team is just not right. They're a bunch of young players who are very confident. And that's, you need that to be a premiership winner like they are. But they need to realise, or someone at the bloody club needs to realise, that it's not a pub competition. And if your players put stuff on social media, or people who are friends of the players or relatives of the players, as in the case of the statue, put things on social media, it's going to reflect poorly on them and reflect poorly on the club. And that's just how it is. And whether you like it or not, we think social media is a pain in the arse, and that's just the world we live in, and that's the world that professional sport lives in. So if you don't get on top of that and make sure that your image is squeaky clean, you're going to cop what you've just copped. So I'd hate to see Penrith undo all the good stuff that they've done in the last 2-3 years in particular, and also their true character as a club and the true character of most of those players in that team. I'd hate for all that to be undone by the fact that they can't, you know, keep their phone in their pockets.
Well, they quite rightly, as you point out, deserve to be celebrated for what they've achieved over the last 2 years in particular, and this year, obviously, with the grand final victory. I totally agree with that. These are young men. This is not great big misdemeanours that we're talking about here, and I'll park Tyrone May out of that one. And I agree with you on Nathan Cleary as well. This is a young man who's at the peak of his powers and will probably be going on to be a great of the game. However, I just wonder whether the club knows how much of their image is reflected through social media, because social media is a big part of society, big part of the game, and a huge part of the Panthers. I mean, every single time you look up, the Panthers are taking photos, they're posting stuff, whether it's TikTok, Twitter, Insta, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
I just wonder whether the club sits down, as Brandy says, and tells them to pull their heads in, whether they've got a framework around that social media aspect.
Obviously not well enough. Obviously they haven't got the message home strong enough. Obviously it didn't sink in with Tyrone May, because that post in particular, where he's obviously referencing the fact that he narrowly avoided jail and somehow playing 13 minutes in a grand final meant that he was suddenly absolved of all blame after pleading guilty in court. And as I said, the magistrate said you were very close to getting a custodial sentence. And if you read the interview with the victim, the female victim of that incident involving Tyrone May in the Sun Herald on Sunday, that was harrowing. if you haven't seen it, Google it and find it, and you'll see exactly why this stuff matters. Because what that poor girl has gone through and doesn't deserve just shows you why it's a serious matter. And probably why Penrith are well within their rights to tear up his contract and say, mate, you're not worth it.
Well, that could well be the outcome. So a fair bit for them to clean up, you think, and keep going. And they've got such great people out there involved in Penrith. So I don't think it's going to sully what they've done so far, but it certainly has tarnished the image of the club. And these little things need tidying up if they want to go on to continue to be a great team and a great club. So we've still got the TV rights deal out there. Just a quick snapshot on where we're at there.
Well, it's funny. All the three major newspapers had it basically just days or weeks away from being done. And then I spoke to sources at Channel 9 and the NRL, and I think there is a considerable gap between what Channel 9 want to pay per year and what the NRL thinks it's going to get. So I'm told that it's still some way off before it gets done. There's a lot of negotiation and a lot of talk coming out of the NRL about Channel 9 being too negative about how it covers the game. But at the end of the day, it'll come down to money, and it always does. It's going to be an interesting one, though, because no one actually knows the size of the deal that the ARL Commission cut with Fox Sports to the end of 2027. Every CEO and chairman in rugby league history has lived and died by the size of the TV deal. The fact that the Fox deal hasn't been revealed publicly, to me, says a lot. Peter Volandis is a survivor. He's got a lot of great supporters, but if the deal's not big enough and that cuts into the annual grant that the clubs get, then that's going to start causing a little bit of drama.
One of the things that I'm keenly interested to know is what the NRL, aside from money, wants from its free-to-air broadcaster. That can quite often be a key component to any deal that's done. 9:30 News is coming up. Webby's here, 0457 736 736, if you'd like to have your say. Yes, I'll be doing that after 10 o'clock. So the answers that I can give you a leg up for tomorrow's Taking Care of Quizness with Vossi is coming your way in about 35 minutes' time. So make sure you stay tuned with your chance to win $1,170. 0457 736 736 is the text line number. And Webby, what you were saying about Ben Simmons and the perception now is starting to ring true. This from the Western Sydney Eagle. Simmons started rubbing people up the wrong way after his carry-on at the Melbourne Casino. Now he's just confirming his tosser status. And Steve says, from an Aussie public perspective, is Simmons now Kyrgios Mark 2.0?
There'll only ever be one Nick Kyrgios, I'd say.
We've had our Nick chat.
Has he sorted things out with his girlfriend? Does anyone know?
Oh, I don't think so.
Love really is a battlefield, particularly in quarantine together.
Who are you, Pat Benatar, Mark 2.0?
I can be whatever you want.
How did you go?
I'm all
at
fired
the
up, baby.
Let's all go. Fired up. There you go. How did you go at the Everest? Who are you on?
I was on Home Affairs, which looked pretty good at the 400, and then a sniper in the grandstand decided to come out and shoot it. It just went backwards.
I was on Geetra.
That was a metaphor, by the way. you were on what?
I was on Geetra and then found out when I read the reports the following day, so lame in one of the legs or something or other, so I had
your
no hope, but I don't,
your money
I
will
don't
do,
think anyone...
Your money will do that.
Yes, that's right.
I tell you what an incredible race, though. So it was exactly the same result as the TJ Smith in the autumn. The ride from James McDonald to time it to the second was incredible. If Mask Crusader doesn't miss the start and squeeze an extra, what was it? I think the margin was ahead. It wins the race. Tommy Berry went over the line and thought he'd won it and said to James McDonald, said, who won it? Who won it? And then James McDonald started to go, well, geez, I thought I won it, but now that you're asking, I don't know. So they were very relieved, but it just shows you the madness of that race, of a $15 million race, that the distance from the nose to the eye, which is considered a head, is about a $5 million difference. Now, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And everyone talks about the Everest and whether, you know, is it too much money? Is it a tricked up sprint? As I said, it's the same result as the TJ Smith in the Autumn, which is worth $2.5 million, and this one's worth $15 million. What's the difference? But that's the whole point of it, the money. Like, that's just incredible. And it's probably going to go up to $20 million at some stage down the track. So that's the whole exciting part of it, is just the ridiculous amount of money that's on offer.
And when you've got that amount of money on offer when you're a jockey, you have to go for broke. I think the hard part for the jockeys is what's coming up next, because the Everest falls before the Melbourne Spring Carnival, of course, before the Cox Plate. So you can go elbows out at the Everest to try and get that 6.2 for your owner and for your jockey, for your trainer and for your connections, and get yourself rubbed out. But what you miss out on is big.
Exactly. That said, I talked to someone about this the other day, an owner who said that, you know, they seem to think that the younger jockeys don't go. They're very conservative these days. They play. They ride to speed maps. They won't necessarily take the risks that they used to. But yeah, when you got that amount of cabbage on the line, it makes it very interesting. Should it be a Group One? The great Bruce McAvaney says so. And Bruce knows everything, as we know.
Well, I think, I mean, it's clearly got, I don't actually know, Webby, what the parameters are to put it into Group 1 status, but it's clearly got its own space in Australian racing and world racing as well, and it's become a pinnacle race. I went down to the local club and watched it now that we could, and I watched it in a little club, and the same reaction when the Everest came on was what you get when you're down the pub when the Melbourne Cup's on. They cheer at the start, they're jumping around at the end, and they want to be captivated for that couple of minutes.
So I think it's like there's a programming committee that decides what's got Group 1 status, and I think it comes down to state politics at the moment. It ticks every box in terms of, you know, in terms of ratings, in terms of prize money, in terms of the quality of the horses, in terms of the quality of the sprint. So you think it will happen sooner than later. The thing that I can't get with the criticism of the Everest, it's never tried to be anything that it's not, anything but what it's supposed to be. People say, oh, well, it's not the Melbourne Cup. It doesn't have the history of the Melbourne Cup. It doesn't have the history of the...
No, of course it doesn't.
It's
not meant to be.
But it never meant... Yeah. It's never... No, it, but it both... There's room for both. You know, if you don't... If Peter Verlandis wanted to take on the Spring Carnival down in Melbourne and come up with something that was different and new and bring new fans to the track, and that's what he's done. So I don't know why there's so much hate on the Everest.
I don't know if there is anymore.
There's plenty. There's still plenty of... I know plenty of punters. They all think, well, you know, I can't get interested in it. It's just another sprint race. I can't get interested in it because I am a traditionalist. I love the traditions of racing. I said it on... I think I might have said it on this show last week. I would have liked to have seen more money pumped into the Epsom. Like, that's been going for over 100 years. Why don't you put more money into that and pump that up as another big race, or make it, restore it to what it was, even though it's still a great race and some great horses have won it. But as I said, the Everest has never tried to be anything that it's not. So I think it's been a great innovation. It's going to get stronger every year, particularly if it's worth $20 million.
Chicken dinner. I actually heard James McDonald on Jimmy's show yesterday. J-Mac pointed out that win was in partnership with Chris Waller. That was their 250th win together.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible as a jockey-trainer combination. And J-Mac now has the ride on the favourite in the Cox Plate with Zaki drawn barrier 6. I'll catch up with Jason Richardson from 7andracing.com later on in the show. Always good to get Richo's thoughts. Paramat says on the text line, how funny is it that Webby needs to qualify the sniper metaphor? Maybe we need a siren and then the statement, metaphor warning. The next statement is a metaphor.
Because I take, you know what, Paramat? Because people are idiots.
Today's
mate,
society.
Mate, someone will hear that and put on social media and say, Andrew Webster has said that horses should be his horse was shot.
His horse was shot and they won't try and find the sniper.
People idiots.
Thank you.
No sniper Djokovic at Randwick on Saturday. No horse was shot. The only problem for Home Affairs was carrying my money and Joel Kane's, and that was enough. You know who gave me that tip? Joel Kane in this very studio last week. convince me, Glenn Boss, Chris Waller, you know, it's under the bottom weight, great price, blah, 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 blah. I convinced myself I was going to win, told everybody. Got shot by a metaphorical sniper.
No, it didn't. Can we get a siren? Matty P, can we get a siren ready? We need one in the studio just in case Webby's going to go down this.
You know what I find with horse racing, Matty? The more I learn about it, the more I punt on it, the more I look at form, the less I realise I actually know. I just sat there and shook my head late on Saturday and said, you know what, you're an idiot. You don't know anything about racing. You think you do, but you don't.
Tell me you got on Incentivise then.
No.
For the Caulfield Cup.
No.
You didn't?
No, it was too short.
You're an idiot. You don't know anything.
Too short.
There you go.
Mate, I don't make the big money that you do where I could go and put 10 grand on something. I'm just a humble foot soldier for the Sydney Morning Herald.
Various organisations and quite a few shows. The Novak Djokovic situation. So this came out yesterday while I was on air. And he's, like I've said, I think he's got every right to say whether or not he doesn't want to say whether he's vaccinated or not. That's his personal right. But I think this is starting to play out big time for the Australian Open. And it's exactly, I think, to the way that I thought it was going to play out. The rules are going to get clearer for these players. And I think the Australian Open will be without Novak next year.
He's got every right to say whether to not say that he's vaccinated, just as the Victorian government and the federal government of Australia has every right not to let him into the country. I think I said it last week. If you can, everyone's got rights, but so do the people that are trying to protect this country from another COVID outbreak. So it'd be a great shame if he didn't come, but we'll just see how much he wants to stick to his morals and not come out for the Australian Open. Because I see that they've come out this morning and said, the Victorian government said, there is no exemption for tennis players. Can you imagine they'd be screaming from the rooftops if professional tennis players like Novak Djokovic got an exemption to come into the country?
Well, Daniel Andrews said that unvaccinated tennis players won't be getting a visa. So it's as simple as that. And I think that's probably where it's going to stay. And I think, too, the scars of what they had to do to keep the competition, to keep the Australian Open going earlier this year by putting them all in quarantine. And we saw all those images of them, you know, playing tennis up against the wall in their hotel rooms for 2 weeks. I think the scars are now enduring for those players who then left here and managed to go around the world and play in various tournaments, etc. Mm. Now they don't want to come back and do that. And the big question, you're right about Novak, is what does he do now? Does he stick to his morals, or does he look at this and go, hang on a second, I could be a 10-time Australian Open champion and I can go past Roger and Rafa at the one that I've won the most at in one hit. He could be a 21-time major winner if he comes out next year. But to do that, he's going to have to jump through the hoops that he's already said he's not prepared to do.
I think that's going to be very interesting for a lot of sports people across the globe and even here domestically. Just how much are they prepared to stick to their guns when it comes to the start of the NRL season? How many of those players not going to be vaccinated if they realise it's going to cut off their $500,000 a year? Let's just see how much they stick to their guns then.
Let's see how that one happens. A couple of quick ones before we let you go. What did you make of Joey Leilua's ugly split from the West Tigers?
It was a very Joey Leilua thing, wasn't it? Do you reckon he has he needs to channel his inner George Costanza and say, it's not you, it's me? Because this seems to happen at every single club that he's ever been at, where they get sick of him. They think they can unlock the brilliance in Joey Leilua, which is there. It happens for a few games or half a season or a little patch of form here or there. Then they get tired of him, they get rid of him. And then he bags the coach and says it's all the coach. I don't understand how he can justify the fact that he was on $850 a year and now Madge McGuire said, mate, you're on a $1,000 a week train and play contract. I don't know how he can justify anything different. Like, I mean, is he aware of how he played? Is he that unaware of how he was playing last year? There's been uneasiness between him and Maguire all season long from when he's dropped him. And, you know, Maguire was part of the reason he came to that club. But the coach is well within his rights to give him the flick or put him on the contract that he wanted. So, yeah, it's just another typical BJ Leilua story, isn't it?
A text from Ryan that I don't think we'll have time to do today. Morning, Matty and Webby. Who's the biggest dickhead you've met in Aussie sport? Ryan, why don't we go the other way? Because I can tell you this much. We could probably sit here and think of a few, but there are many more great people that we've met in Australian sport than those that we'd rather not be around. Would you concur with that?
Yeah. I've worked with a few. But I'm not going to divulge.
Have we got that siren? He's about to say something that we need the siren, the metaphor siren. We're going to have to find that. Good on you, mate. Great to catch up.
Why don't we get the Phantom Siren in here?
Oh, no, don't do that.
Do you know I've met the Phantom Siren? I know the Phantom Siren. Oh. And I saw him once on Coogee Bay Road, and I said, give us a siren, and he did the siren, and about four car alarms on Coogee Bay Road went off. So I don't know if we'd need him in the studio.
And dogs in the eastern suburbs have never been the same since. Exactly. Nice to catch up with you today, Andrew. You enjoy your day.
Thank you, Matty.
Andrew Webster, the chief sports writer at the Sydney Morning Herald. Send through your texts, your thoughts around Ben Simmons. What about the Panthers? What do they do there? 0457 736 736. If Ben Simmons is on the slide, what about falls from grace? Can you think of any of those athletes who've been at the absolute peak of their powers and then disappeared, probably for what they've done away from the sporting arena? Tiger Woods comes to mind, but didn't he bounce back? Although he's now laid up pretty much still. It is 9:45. Don't forget, after the 10 o'clock news, I'll have some answers for you for tomorrow's edition of Taking Care of Quizness right here on Breakfast with Vossie from 6 a.m. Your chance to win $1,170.